Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Oh, Tom. All right. So, welcome. It is We Are the Watchers, episode 30.
Take two.
Take two. You won't know it's take two, but for us, it's definitely take two.
Oh, it's take two.
We had a gremlin that came into some part of the recording setup and break it.
That's not nice to call Abe a gremlin.
Oh, I know. Abe was here as well and was really fun. We had so much fun with Abe, and he was supposed to be the guest on this week, and he was, and we chatted for ages. It was really good stuff. And then the gremlin decided to break the whole recording.
Yeah. It's a good thing he has time travel powers.
Exactly.
So hopefully he can join us next week.
He'll definitely be here next week. So at least we get to look forward to something.
Woo!
Yeah, so Abe next week, which will be really cool. Man, we talked about a lot, and I'm kind of happy. I'm trying to look at the positive side, because
sure.
A few things that have happened since we recorded,
right,
we wouldn't have been able to talk about.
This is very true.
Which I just quickly want to go into what we've got coming up.
Okay.
This episode. Of course, we'll talk about spoilers in the spoiler section, like Handmaids, Fear the Walking Dead, Westworld. I don't know if you've caught up with
it. Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Because, intake one,
yeah.
You hadn't watched it.
No, I hadn't. And now I have. And now
brilliant.
I feel contemplative.
Fantastic. Yeah, exactly. We'll also be talking about some stuff that we've watched that isn't spoilerish, and maybe have a look at some things that are worth rewatching.
Yeah.
When you got those days where you're sick or it's just too cold.
It's the time of year to discuss it.
Oh, it really is. It really is. And we've got a quiz at the end of it.
Yes.
I have a feeling you'll be quite good.
I have a feeling also. But that's okay.
That's okay. We'll pretend we didn't do it the first time. Look, just really quickly, now that we've had all the E3 stuff, which is the big gaming conference over in LA, you have been talking outside of recording about some of the really cool trailers and gameplays that we saw so that we can look forward to.
Yeah.
You was very quick to show a link to the Spider-Man.
Oh yeah.
Game. It was actually gameplay.
Yes.
It was all gameplay.
Yeah.
It had real sort of like Batman feel to it with the combos of.
I think some of the same people working have transitioned across
so.
And working on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got that feel.
But then it goes up a whole extra level.
Well, there's going to be a lot more height. Battles, whereas Batman,
literally.
You'd hide in the rafters and jump down and stuff.
Yeah.
This one is going to be about pulling people up to the rafters and getting up there.
I'm more than happy with that.
Oh,
it looked really fun.
And that conglomeration, the coming together of the villains at the end of there.
Yeah, and I can only assume the bit of the story of the game that we saw is the very beginning.
It felt like that.
Yeah, they're not going to give away the grand end. So almost at the beginning of the game, we can assume that he has got, was it five or six enemies?
There were five
enemies?
There plus one that arrived as
that's
it went
right.
to black. And one, there's a team of villains for Spider-Man over the years called the Sinister Six.
And they'll, yeah, okay.
And they have rotating membership and who's in charge. So that person that we didn't see, I think, will either be Dr. Octopus or Green Goblin.
Yep.
Because they're normally the leader.
I've heard of both of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was stoked because there was a green guy in there with a big pointy tail. His name's Scorpion. He's shit, but I fucking love him.
Why is he shit and why do you love him?
So he was just like a PI, a private investigator, and J. Jonah Jameson. Bring me photos of Spider-Man!
Amazing name.
It's so good. He hired this guy, Mac Gargan, to undergo experimental treatment and have something fused to him to try and bring down the spider menace. And instead, this dude got fused into a scorpion suit. And he's shit.
He's huge.
He's huge. And, like, dude can fight, but he's thick. He's
yeah,
quite
okay.
dumb. Like, Rhino is there as well. Rhino is traditionally the dumbest.
Mm-hmm.
And then Scorpion's just above.
So they're having a competition over who's stupid.
Spider-Man has a lot of dumb enemies.
That's how he manages to get them into jail all the time.
Well, the best villains for any hero are always a mirror image of them in some element. So
yeah.
If you look at Batman, every single good Batman villain is a mirror image of some element of Batman. Spider-Man's very similar, but his are fused with animals. So it's always animal and then some part of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And because Spidey's so smart and uses his brains to outthink people, he's often up against guys that are built around brute force.
Yeah. And that's obviously why they've come up with the combat system that it looks like they have for this game. It's going to be really fun.
Just so much bouncing around and proper swinging. Like the Spider-Man 2 video game is fantastic. It's from about 2004.
I believe that was Treyarch who do the Black Ops 4 Call of Duties, which are, people always say are the best ones.
Yes, and they were the first people making a Spider-Man, because there's been many, many Spider-Man games, but they were the first ones to twig to the fact that, hey, web swinging would be way more fun if you can't just shoot a web into the sky. You've actually got to hook it on to specific buildings and find points so that you ricochet and this sort of stuff.
It gives the player some realism in something that obviously is not real.
And that's what this looks like. It's going to replicate that as closely as possible.
Fantastic. I do like the fact that people are going to get not only the ability to pretend that they're Spider-Man for however many hours the game goes for, but Spider-Man's got that element of flying. I know he's not. He's swinging from, but it's still got that flying, that sense of, you're better than everybody else. You can get there faster.
And I have a feeling it won't just be Spider-Man that we play as.
Cool.
I think we'll talk about it in a bit. But Miles Morales, the new Spider-Man, I think he'll appear at some point.
Fantastic.
They've already shown a few different costumes that Spider-Man has.
They did too.
Yeah, Iron Spider, which is the one that he has in Avengers Infinity War.
Yep.
Spider-Punk.
Spider-Punk sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, he looks like someone from the Sex Pistols.
Okay, bring it on.
Wearing a spider suit with a Union Jack on the front.
Oh, how fun would it be to switch from different Spideys?
Yeah, I want to swing around in a sleeveless leather jacket.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You're only human, that's after all.
And they haven't revealed the third one yet.
Okay, do you have any guesses?
I don't know, but there was a pretty fun one way back in the 60s where Johnny Storm couldn't be involved in a Fantastic Four battle. So Spider-Man stepped in, but he didn't want to be Spider-Man. So he wore Johnny Storm's clothes and then put a paper bag over his head. So that's known as Baghead Spidey.
Really?
Yeah, it's a real deep cut.
Yeah.
But I'd be...
There's got to be... I mean, if they do that sort of reference, a lot of Spidey fans are going to just...
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll put an extra point in there out of 10
review. Give us a fun, dumb one.
Right. Okay. Good fun. Speaking of fun and dumb, I'm not going to be talking about that.
Mm.
Did you see the Last of Us 2 trailer?
No. Haven't. I didn't play that.
Well, the first one, it's pretty much a post-apocalyptic world.
Oh, I watched lots of videos. Yeah, I watched playthroughs and this sort of stuff. Well, it's just I didn't have the time.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough. It's a pretty intense game and there are zombie-like creatures in it.
You got to be real quiet, right?
Very, very quiet. It's very stealthy, and you get your offsider, who is Ellie, in the first game. Except in the second game, Ellie's grown up, and she appears to be the main character.
Sure.
And, oh my gosh, there's this... I won't give too much away in case you want to watch the trailer and experience for yourself.
Is there a giraffe?
There's no giraffe yet, but there has to be one, surely. There has to be one. But there was this scene in the trailer. It was a bit of cut scenes and also gameplay.
Sure.
And the cut scene had a kiss between two characters.
Okay.
Now, you know, video game kisses always look horrendous. Yeah, they look horrendous.
Let's mash polygons.
Exactly. This looks so real.
Okay.
It looks so real, and that's what a lot of people who are not 12-year-old boys are talking about.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're moving on
from
the fact that there is a kiss to the fact that it looks so good. And the gameplay looks amazing. It's stressful. They didn't show any zombie-like creatures. It was only combat against other humans.
Okay.
But maybe that's what the game's about now. Maybe it's gotten so far into the future, maybe 5 years, where most of the infected have been wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is just human against human as society tries to rediscover itself and figure out who's boss, kind of like The Walking Dead wants to do.
So you say Ellie is the main character.
Ellie's the main character now. I'm guessing she's late teens, maybe early 20s.
Did we have any eyes on Joel?
We didn't. But she did refer to somebody said something about her old man, and she said, oh, yeah, you know what he's like, that kind of thing. So there was but in the first trailer late last year, you saw the back of Joel's head, and he said something to her.
Okay.
So he's still around.
Yeah.
We just don't know how big a role he's going to take.
Sure.
Or how long he's there. It's that kind of game where you can lose big characters.
Sure.
We don't know. But it looked really good. And
awesome.
There were some other great fun games that you could see on the horizon for gamers.
Everyone, E3. A lot of people are very excited about Cyberpunk.
Yeah, so Cyberpunk is how would you, I mean, just based on the trailer itself, you could sort of say it's similar to Blade Runner, that kind of feel. It's made by the same guys that did The Witcher 3, which was amazing. And obviously it's not based around some sort of fantasy world now. It's a cyberpunk world. So they've gone from completely different genre to completely different genre. But their game style, I'm hoping, will be similar. That open world, but you're still, you're on a path, but you can go and do side missions.
Cool.
And the world feels lived in.
Nice.
I'm hoping. Yeah. I don't know. All we saw was the trailer.
Yep.
Who knows?
We are the Watchers. Now, the voice cracked. Hi, I'm the voiceover guy, and I've had enough. Toodaloo.
Any actual newsy news outside of the gaming world? Have you gotten any TV show newsy stuff?
Got a couple of things that we can jump through quickly. One, are you hanging for more Roseanne?
You know I'm a bit unsure what I want.
I don't want it. But apparently, because of all the kerfuffle that happened and stuff.
So much kerfuffle.
They might be doing a spin-off called Darlene.
That makes sense. Yes. Darlene, a.k.a. Sarah Gilbert, is the executive producer, which I didn't realise until the kerfuffle happened. And she sort of put out a statement. I thought that was interesting that Darlene put out a statement, and then I realized why she had is because she's in, well, one of the people in charge. So Darlene, is this just a rumor at the moment, or is this actually got legs, do you reckon?
Look, the trades I'm hearing reporting are saying it's about 85% done deal.
Okay.
That everybody working on the show wants in. I mean, both showrunners and executive producers have distanced themselves lately. Wendy Cummings, she's gone back to doing stand-up.
Oh, has she?
Wanda Sykes let everyone know a day or two before everything happened with Roseanne.
She was definitely pretty vocal.
Yes.
Okay, so if we do decide, we don't have anything to do with it. If they do decide to go with a spin-off, they'll call it Darlene. They'll have to kill Roseanne off.
Yep.
The character, surely.
Or chain her in the basement.
Yeah, that's true. She'll just be that person that is referred to every now and then. You hear banging.
Oh, maybe she'll get throat cancer and she'll be mute.
She might be mute. And all you do is you see the back of her head, like Dickie Neen. It could literally be anybody.
Maybe Darlene moves next door.
Yes.
And then Roseanne only gets to interact like Wilson across the fence.
That's good. That's so good.
And Goodman's, Dan's allowed to come
in. Allowed to come in. And Jackie, whether she's allowed to come in or not, she just walks into the house anyway. So it's not her house, so she might as well visit Darlene's house instead of Roseanne's. Oh,
if they did a gritty, real-world reboot of The Kool-Aid Man, John Goodman would be perfect.
He'd be perfect for it.
Smashing through the walls. Oh, yeah.
I can actually see this Darlene show now getting traction.
I can see it getting traction. I can also see myself not watching.
I can also see it being something that happens for a couple of seasons and then they just let it go.
Yeah.
But, that's a couple of seasons of people being employed who had nothing to do with the controversy.
Exactly. A couple of hot trailers came out. So, obviously, we talked a lot about the video game side of stuff.
Yeah.
Cloak and Dagger, the teaser for that came out. The first episode's actually dropped this week. I haven't watched yet, but it's a pair of teenage Marvel characters, a guy and a girl.
I saw the trailer for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming soon.
Yeah, also, I've got first episode waiting for me.
Fantastic.
In Australia, it's starting in a couple of
weeks.
Yeah,
it's not out yet in Australia. No. Yeah.
They are two teenage homeless kids on the run. The white girl, Tandy, the black guy, Tyrone. And they get snatched up and experimented on, and both get weird powers that only really work in concert with one another. But she can throw shards of diamond sharp light.
That has to come in handy when you've got villains after you.
Oh yeah, and him, his insides, his he wears this big flowing cloak.
Yeah.
And when he opens the cloak, there's nothing that's inside. He's connected to a dark force dimension.
Oh wow!
So he can teleport people, but he can also, if someone shoots a missile, he can swoop it and make the missile disappear into the dimension there. And
that's very handy. But there's a lot of timing that he'll have to get right with that.
There's a lot of practice involved.
In the trailer, at least in Australia, the trailer that they're playing here, it sort of, to me, looked like they didn't really know each other beforehand.
No, okay. They get thrown together by circumstance.
Yeah, yeah.
And even, they've been around 30-something years now. They still have great issues.
Yeah, right.
Butting heads and
an old married couple now.
Yeah.
Well, not now, but in comic book world.
In comic book world, yeah.
I have a feeling that that show might actually get a bit of people watching.
Look, it could be cool. Yeah. It could be Dawson's Creek trash. Oh, so I got to wait and see what tone they go for, whether it's aimed at adults or whether...
they might be going for Riverdale.
Yeah, they might be going very, very teen.
Yeah.
Which is cool. As I said, they're teen heroes. They're from Spider-Man's corner of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got Lego Movie 2, the second part.
Yes, I saw that trailer.
Mad Max.
Yeah. Very much Mad Max.
Yeah, five years since the events of Taco Tuesday. And it looks like what they set up at the end of the first film with the younger sister coming down with her Duplo.
Which will be so much fun. I love the fact that this is... Because Lego World is all about make-believe and playing mm-hmm. and making your own world. And they really sort of carried that through the whole movie yep. of the first one. So this second one, I can really see it continuing that. And, of course, Duplo's bigger, yep. more powerful. Yep. Well, in that it's bigger. And I'm just interested to see if there are Duplo characters, how their conversations go, if they're really sort of like
sure.
3-year-old-ish.
Well, from a danger perspective, they'll be able to hold bigger weapons and things because they've got a much bigger hand.
That's true.
It's an odd thing to notice. But yes, that's what I thought. It also looks like they've snuck in a few like very old discontinued lines that are still popular. It's like I think Bionicle got spotted in there and some stuff like that. So that'll
be fun.
Yeah, cool shout-outs to discontinued and forgotten toys.
We've still got a while for the actual movie, but it's nice to be able to catch these trailers.
Yeah.
It gives a little tidbit.
If we get a hint of Toy Story 3, of toys being abandoned and not played with anymore and stuff, I could see the story very much going that way.
Yeah, you'd get the heartstrings and you'd get the nostalgia. Oh. You'd get everything. It's actually a pretty sensible way to go storyline-wise for them. Did you see that Willy Wonka's going to be remade?
Whoa.
This will be the third time?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why are we doing this?
Because people need to know.
Why do they need to know?
Go back to the beginning and find out how...
Can't you just read Roald Dahl's book?
Yeah, or just...
Like three times.
Who the fuck cares who that weirdo guy stole orange midgets from?
Well, apparently that weirdo guy's potentially going to be Donald Glover. He seems to be the front runner. There was talk a couple of weeks ago about Ryan Gosling, but Donald's been... His name's being thrown around more now in a more solidified manner. But I'm sure he won't be as creepy as... I found Johnny Depp really creepy.
I didn't see that. I didn't go and see it. I hate Johnny Depp. I'm not watching that film.
It's him, but way creepier. It's like mannequin Johnny Depp.
And it's him doing Michael Jackson, basically, right?
Yeah.
Hi, come into my factory and taste my chocolate.
I mean, you could make Willy Wonka an actual likable character, but he decided not to. I mean, sure, there are people who really enjoyed it. It had a creepy factor to it, for sure.
There's no trailer for it yet, but the poster came out this morning for Dumbo.
Yes.
Live action Dumbo.
Yes.
I'm on board.
Oh, how many times did you watch the Dumbo movie as a kid?
Many.
Yeah, me too.
I want to see what sort of tripped out thing they do for pink elephants on parade, because that, even back in the cartoon, was crazy.
Yeah, so, it was that moment. It was the Fantasia moment for sure. So
I think they'll have to sand some of the edges off the film and make it a little more PC for
today. Because we can't cope today.
No, there's racist crows.
Oh, the racist crows.
Well, I don't know if the crows themselves are racist.
They may not have been aware.
But the caricature of them is quite racist.
In the original.
I ain't never seen a horse flower. Talking like that.
So yeah.
I have to update it a little bit.
Yeah, that you might get somebody. Who would you get for that sort of thing?
Well, I would have said Michael Clarke Duncan. For very deep voice. Because they'll still be crows, they'll just be voiced.
Even have someone like Will Ferrell doing. I mean, they could go completely different.
Oh,
have
you know Will that's Ferrell... the sort of thing Zach Galifianakis would build, huh?
Oh, yes. What about Elizabeth Banks? Stick her in there.
Yeah, I'd even throw in with Ross Marquand.
Ross Marquand. Yeah, he'd be brilliant. Oh, he'd be so good. Yeah. I mean, he does them enough on his own Instagram page. You might as well just account. You should might as well just pay him.
Yeah.
Put him on.
Yeah.
He's good enough. Look, I saw the Ocean's 8 got a big opening. Well, you know, bigger than I think they anticipated.
Sure.
It was $41.5 million
That's pretty
over
good.
In the US. Yeah. And I think I think the general consensus is we're all going to stand back and just see how it went, because it's years since Ocean movies.
Yep.
You've suddenly changed it to an all-female cast. People had absolute panic attacks when Ghostbusters was an all-female mm-hmm. cast and just downright said nah to it. But there were a lot of big names in this Ocean's 8 movie. I mean, yeah. you've got our very own Cate Blanchett, mm-hmm. Sandra Bullock. Mm. Who else was in there?
Rihanna.
Yes.
Awkwafina.
That's right. Mindy.
Mindy Kaling.
Mindy Kaling. Yeah. A lot of people.
Yeah. Tell me, if there was going to be a cameo from one of the guys in the other movies, who would you put your money on? Not that I've seen it. I don't know, but...
Ooh. I wonder if Julia Roberts is in it. I mean, I know she's not a guy, but she could be the Link.
Yeah. Well, Sandra's meant to be George Clooney's sister, I believe.
Okay.
I think that's the
connection connection. Gee, who would you have? I mean, I'd like to see Brad Pitt because his character was quite fun.
I got a feeling if it was anyone, it might be Matt Damon because Matt Damon did an unannounced cameo in Thor 3, in Thor Ragnarok.
He did like a whole season and a half of 30 Rock.
He did an uncredited cameo in a ton of makeup and prosthetics for Deadpool 2.
Did he really?
Yes.
Hang on, did you know at the time?
I suspected.
Okay.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, that's not an actor. That's someone. I got to work out who that is.
Yeah, right.
I thought about it later. And so, yeah, I think Matt Damon's on a bit of a thing at the moment of burying himself and being silly in films.
Yeah, well, I actually think he's had the history of it because I'm trying to think back now to other TV shows, and he definitely was a reoccurring character in Will and Grace for a bit.
He loves getting about. He's on Entourage an awful lot. He bullies Vinny Chase into donating to charity.
For a minute there, I was going to say, no, that's because he's like the executive producer. I went, no, that's Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. I don't usually get those two mixed up, but apparently my brain wanted to just then.
Nice podcast. They make them for men.
Any other news stories?
So we mentioned Spider-Man earlier. There's the trailer for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse animated film coming out. It's got a very unique visual style.
In what way?
It looks kind of like a video game-ish.
Yeah, right.
It's quite blocky and angular.
Okay.
It's very, very kinetic and high energy.
Mm.
Well worth a look. And that's going to be following Miles Morales, which is the new Spider-Man. He's a young teenage guy, half African-American.
Okay.
Has
he...
slightly different powers.
Okay. What are the powers?
Well, he didn't build web shooters.
Uh-huh.
Peter ended up giving them to him, or in the... Ultimate Universe, Peter's family bequeathed them to him after Peter died.
Yep.
But he has like an electric shock power. He calls it a venom sting, where he can touch someone. And the bigger they are, the longer it waits to go off. So he can be fighting someone and do the sting and, you know, your low-level...
Do spidey stuff.
Yeah, your low-level thug gets zapped pretty quick.
Yeah.
But if he tries to do that on, say, Rhino, he might hit it. Doesn't work, does it a bunch of times, and then 2 minutes later, Rhino starts having electric seizures.
I wonder if... No, they wouldn't do that in the new Spider-Man game, would they yet? Because that's the Venom.
Yeah.
They will, do you reckon?
Yeah, if they have Miles, he can camouflage as well. He can
Fantastic.
Go not quite invisible, but he can blend. Is this sort of stuff?
I wonder how far down the line of Spider-Man movies we have to get before Miles starts to become... Well, before Miles becomes Spider-Man for us in the films.
Well, this is the first big step towards that, I think.
Okay.
You know, it's taken, more than 10 years or something in the comics.
Well, Peter Parker is the name.
Yeah, and Peter is still around.
Yeah, okay.
And he serves... They kind of split things up. So Peter now operates more on an Iron Man level. For a long time, he's been running his own company and this sort of stuff.
Right.
Whereas Miles has been kicking it around street level in the same way Peter used to.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So he's the sort of he's taken the OG Spidey.
That's right.
Position.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And Spidey is, Peter is mentoring him. And we see in the trailer as well, Spider-Gwen, who is... Gwen Stacy.
I thought you were going to say Gwyneth Paltrow then for a second. I was like, really?
No,
do we need that?
No, she can stick in the Iron Man films.
So Gwen Stacy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And she, in her universe, in our universe, she died very young, killed by Green Goblin. That was Spider-Man's second greatest tragedy behind his uncle dying.
Yeah.
But in this universe, Peter instead dies in her arms. And so she becomes Spider-Man or Spider-Woman.
Yes.
And just calls herself Spider-Gwen when she meets the others.
Spider-Gwen, Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen is awesome.
Is she?
She's a drummer in a punk band.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. So that's, that trailer is out?
Yeah, trailer's out. I think the film's out very tail end of this year. Okay. Somewhere around there.
Yeah, we can wait.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of other stuff we need to get through in the meantime. What else have you seen?
Well, look, I know I see a lot of things, but I got to give a shout out to a dude. He has been covering things on Twitter and Instagram because he's seen the Avengers Infinity War every day since it's come out.
How do you even get time to do? Oh, I guess you would have time. You go after work or
he
whatever.
Makes time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
on his 43rd viewing,
I was
going to
say,
week,
I feel like it was a while ago since we watched it.
Yeah, on his 43rd viewing last week,
holy
IMAX hit him up afterwards and gave him free 50 tickets so he can keep the streak going. And then the Russo brothers, the director of Avengers Infinity War, got in contact with him and he's now going to the premiere of Avengers 4.
No
All
way.
For being a lazy sumbitch and watching that film every day.
Look, if they're going to give free tickets away to the premiere, why not give them to someone they genuinely know will love it and have the best time? And also, if he's garnered a bit of a social media following, they've got all of that too. Oh, that's so cool. Mm. So with 43 and then he was given 50 tickets, he's going to get well over 100
views.
Hope
so. I hope he keeps it going.
Yeah.
It's, I think it will more come down to how long it stays in cinema.
That's true.
Because once it goes, especially from IMAX, then he's more limited.
Do they have to guarantee 50 sessions for him?
I don't think so.
Lots of technicalities.
I'm sure his tickets are not one per day use. I'm sure they've given it to him so they can say, look, it's ending in 2 weeks. You've got 20 tickets remaining. Do as you will.
Take your friends.
Yeah.
Go twice a day. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So what a great story. That if the internet didn't exist, that wouldn't be a thing.
I know. No one would know. Look, the other last piece of news I'll give.
Mm.
Very, very cool. A show I love called Nathan For You.
Yes.
Who's about he's a comedian, but people don't realize he's a comedian. He's a small business expert. He goes out and helps small businesses with advertising, promotion.
Okay.
And the stuff he does is really out there and weird.
So he's sort of along the lines of a Gordon Ramsay kitchen nightmare thing. That he goes in and tries to fix it.
Yes.
But that's where the twist is.
Well, if you take that and mix it with an Ali G or a Borat.
Yeah,
of
right.
Someone who's a comedian and playing with them that they don't realize.
And they've got no idea.
No, and he comes up with utterly ridiculous things. So one of them is for a small liquor store.
Yeah.
Struggling to get new customers.
Yeah.
He helps them set up a leasing and down payment system for minors to come in and buy alcohol for their 21st birthday.
And how does he deliver this so seriously? Like, is there any point where you see the business owner, their face, where they're like, is he joking or not?
Nope.
So they always take him for face value.
Well, not always.
Okay.
They don't necessarily always do, and some of them don't quite buy into it and stuff, but he's so sincere and genuine, but he's also very monotone and controlled.
Okay.
So he doesn't get excitable.
Okay.
And his confidence, the attitude that he exudes, they just trust the fact. You know, he starts every episode with, hi, my name's Nathan. I went to business school. I got really good grades.
Okay.
He didn't. He got B minus in this. This sort of stuff. You got fine grades.
You know, it's all in context. Like for him, it might have been amazing.
Yes. So they've done 4 seasons over the last, I want to say, 6 years.
That's a lot for people still not to know who he is. He goes into these businesses.
That's it. A lot of people do know, and that's why they have to spread it out a bit more, and it gets a lot more creative with what they're doing.
Okay.
Very excitingly, they got nominated for an Emmy, which hasn't happened before.
Yeah.
So he put together a video. He got in contact with some of the people that investigated the hacking scandal from the election.
Yes.
And had them come and sit down and talk with him on camera for a 12-minute video on don't do this,
but
this is how easy it would be to hack the Emmys, and it's a step-by-step process.
Oh, no. Did you manage to catch it? Did you watch it?
Oh, I watched it.
Have you figured it out? Like, is it easy enough for, I mean...
It's very easy.
To hack the Emmys.
Well, to influence.
I remember back in the day when the Logies, maybe they still do it, but...
In the TV week.
You would write in.
They still do it.
They still do it. And
I know, because for the last time I went to a hairdresser.
Right. Mm. And places like Channel 7, Channel, like all of those, they would just buy TV weeks so that they could fill it out and say all the Channel 9 shows are the best.
Yep.
Vote for those. I assumed it went online, but maybe...
There is online components now and this sort of stuff. But
so
yes,
this is, I assume, sort of what it is. But the Emmys, the public don't vote, do they?
No.
So we're really there. Nathan's really trying to get people to go the back way.
There might be some popularity vote maybe. Or something in there. I don't know.
It wouldn't be much, though.
Yeah, it's a stunt. He does stunts, and he's great at stunts. And this is a very well-planned stunt to get more attention. It may get him kicked out of the Emmys forever.
Would he care?
He wouldn't care
okay.
one bit.
Yeah, it sounds like once he's done this, because for him to win an Emmy just means he's been recognised, but for this it means a whole storyline.
It also means if he wins an Emmy... Yeah. It potentially kills the show because then there's too much spotlight.
Yeah, fair enough.
He does struggle with people recognizing him from time to time. So the most recent season included a little more prosthetics, disguises, costume work. Yeah.
So this type of show really does have a shelf life. Obviously, he wants it to be the best it can be, but he doesn't want many people to watch it because if many people watch it, then he can't have the show.
Well, it's this weird thing of I think he's trying to pump out as much as he can before it hits that threshold.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the most rewatchable shows ever. Every time I rewatch, I catch extra things. And even though I know what the twist is, I know what the gotcha he's going to pull is.
Yeah.
It's watching him move the chess pieces.
Oh, so once... Yeah, so you've watched the reveal already and it's going and watching the motion.
And you watch him very, very intelligently and emotionally manipulate people into agreeing with his ludicrousness.
Geez, there'd be a real art to that.
Yeah.
Not everybody could do it. Not everybody would want to do it.
No, he's just... there's something about him that's very trustworthy.
Yeah,
so
right.
People instantly let their guard down and...
So if, for example, this Emmys thing happens and he goes, okay, and now the show's done, what can you see him going on to do?
Well, since then, okay, he's done a lot of writing.
Right.
And he's appeared on other shows, bits and pieces, small roles. He had a very small role in The Disaster Artist, which is the Room film. Mm. I could see him being behind the camera more.
Yeah.
Because he's the show's creator and he's very involved in the production of everything.
Yeah, right.
On the other hand, I could see him putting together an amazing prank show that he hosts and doesn't appear in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he doesn't do any of the stunts.
Yeah, so when the stunt is being done on whoever it is, there's no indication that, oh, Nathan's here. Oh, okay, I think I know what's going on.
But on the flip side, he might just surprise everyone and move back to Ontario and go and be a taxation law expert or something. Like,
he's that kind of person.
He's such an oddball.
You have to expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about oddballs, I found on Netflix that they had one of the Hairy Bikers seasons.
Sure.
They're cooks from England.
I'm aware of the Hairy Bikers.
They're great. And I realise in telling people, I'm like, oh, yeah, I watch Netflix Hairy Bikers chicken and egg season, which is they go to different parts of the world and try all the different chicken dishes.
Sure.
And eggs.
I'm okay with that.
It's great. Like, for me, travel and cooking, combine those two, like Anthony Bourdain. Like, sure. It was a travel cooking show.
Sure.
It's perfect. It's the perfect genre to sit down. Yeah, exactly, right? Everybody likes chicken. And these guys are just they're so soothing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You can sit down, you can watch it contently, or you can do stuff on your phone or whatever and just phase in and out of it. It's the kind of show that is pleasant and nice to watch. Cozy.
Oh, lovely.
Cozy. So they start off in the UK.
Yep.
And then... Each episode is a different place. So I think next it's maybe France and then America. They go to Morocco as well. There's a whole heap of them.
Do they ride their bikes there?
They do, except some of the places the bikes are a little bit different. And Cy was pretty unimpressed with the they weren't in Paris. They were somewhere else in France. And he was very unimpressed because they say the only ones they could get, but they obviously did it on purpose, were those motorized bicycles. You know, you pedal for a bit and then it takes off. And he's like, what is this? Their accents are amazing
Does one of them ride in a sidecar or am I confusing that with the two fat ladies?
No, that's the two fat ladies. Yeah. They should totally do that. That'll be amazing. It's a similar sort of show, actually. Except there's more humour with this.
So sure.
I think if my memory serves, the two fat ladies were quite serious about what they did. There was no joking.
No.
It was very serious. But, yeah, a great show, and it's on Netflix. And if you haven't seen that series, or if you have, watch it again. It's the kind of, like I've said this before, Rick Stein, I could, and we will be talking about this later, actually, I could re-watch Rick Stein episodes of him travelling Venice or wherever he is, I could watch it over and over again because it's just it's really nice, and he's really nice to watch, and it's just it's easy to sit there and rewatch stuff. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but we will get through more stuff that we've watched. What have you watched this week?
So, newest stuff that I've watched this week, American Ninja Warrior season 10 has kicked off.
I can't believe it's been going for 10 seasons.
And that's just an American
that's
one.
That's insane.
Real Ninja Warrior has been going much, much longer.
Exactly.
So it's a proper institution now, this sort of stuff. There have been two episodes so far for the qualifiers, one in Dallas. The two big changes for the show this year, one, they've reduced the entry age, so you can now enter from your 19th birthday.
So what was it, 21 before?
It was.
Okay.
And so it means there's a guy named The Kid who's been floating around the scene for best part of 10 years.
Wow.
Since he was very young.
So he loved it from
a
kid.
And lives and breathes it.
Amazing.
And just his first ever official ninja appearance, smashed it. Like, quickest time of the night, first one up the wall.
He knew it all back to back.
Yep.
Yeah. He could have done it blindfolded.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, but it's not just being a fan of it. You have to be in pretty good condition.
Yes.
To be able to do this. So it's great that it has inspired him to become so
fit. Well, that's it. And they showed him when he was very young and he was small, scrawny and this sort of stuff. And now he's about 6'7".
Oh, really?
And gangly. There's not much.
Right.
He's not thick with muscle or anything.
Oh, there you go.
Well, to do Ninja Warrior well, you want to be as light as possible.
Because there's a lot of,
there's a lot of hang time.
There is.
So the less you were carrying, the better. There's a new warped wall, which is the final challenge each time where you've got to run up that curved wall.
Yep.
So it used to be 12, then they made it 14 feet. The new one is the mega warp wall, 18 feet. You get up $10,000 right away.
Wow. And the kid being 6'7" has already got a bit of an advantage.
He does. He does. he didn't go the mega wall.
It was too hard.
Well, you get one shot at the mega wall. If you don't get that one, then you only get one shot at the actual wall.
Okay.
Whereas normally if you just go for the normal wall, you get three attempts.
Yeah, right. So, he's gone safe.
Yes. First time out, do it properly.
Yeah.
The second episode was from LA, the qualifiers there, and it was Jurassic World night and Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard.
No way!
They were there. And people
so
in wrapped
cool.
suits running around the course and all this. It was very cool.
Chris Pratt would have been fun.
Yeah. He wasn't involved much, you know. There was occasional cross to them in the crowd. Like, we're having a great time here at Ninja Warrior. Well, okay. Go and see Jurassic World.
Fallen
Kingdom.
Standard sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, promotional
but
stuff.
I still really enjoyed it. And they do some funny crossovers. So last year, the year before, they did the celebrity Ninja Warrior episode. And Stephen Amell, who plays Arrow, was on and just loving it. He's loved Ninja Warrior for years.
So he's cool, and people genuinely like stuff like, you know, and then they're able to take part.
And the other celebrities had a go and did well and got through three or four things.
That's pretty good.
And he finished the course went around the corner to another one that they'd had set up from the week before and insisted on doing that. He was just that into it.
That's so cool. I guess without it being Jurassic World special edition, he was not scared of any sort of dinosaurs attacking
him. No, there was
him.
Nothing jumping out that way. But look, the reason he had to go around to that last wall is they don't do it on Arrow much now, but for the first season, every episode at some point we saw him using a salmon wall, which is where it's got the two sides.
Yes.
You've got a bar and you've got to do pull-ups and keep moving the bar up. And he's an absolute master at it.
I don't even know how you could do it once.
Well, apparently it's very, very good for archery because it strengthens your shoulders, your elbows, you know, that whole area there. So he's an absolute gun at it.
Wow.
And, they hadn't put it in the real course, so he insisted on doing it around the corner.
Do you remember how he went?
Oh, he killed the salmon wall, and then when he got up the top, you had to, I think it was climbing across a beam that swung, holding onto doorknobs, and every second or third randomly doorknob would spin. Wasn't secured properly.
That's not fun.
And then when you get to that end of that platform, it drops horizontally about 7 feet, and
you've got
to swing yourself up to the next one. And it was the drop that did him in. It's the drop that does everyone in.
Yeah.
Because that's the part you're not in control of.
Yeah, that's
everything
right.
Everything else you are. Ninja Warrior was great. Also, BattleBots is back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's been back for a bit, season-wise, but this new season's kicked off. I didn't see Grant Imahara once, who's from Mythbusters.
Interesting. I wonder what that's about.
But this might be because I was watching BattleBots Fight Night.
specifically.
So you think maybe he's not in those
I think he might be on the core one where this is boom count.
Yeah, okay. Well, that might make more sense.
But it was really violent. It was great. There was a new spinning, rotating blade on top thing bot.
That sounds super dangerous.
It went at 280 miles an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
But another one got in underneath it and flipped the blade off. So it was just an exposed robot. And the operator's like, I submit.
It's useless.
And they're like, this is BattleBots. There's no submission, only destruction.
Oh, no. And killed it. And the creators had to watch it being completely destroyed.
Destroyed.
Their faces are
soul-crushing. Yeah, and BattleBots is at the point now where it's not just the two robots battling, but they've got blades swinging around the sides and bits that have sensor pressures that pop up with flames. And all, like, it's pretty great.
Oh, my cousins used to love... What was the original incarnation of it? Robot Wars, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they loved that so much. I remember watching it a lot with them. And there were magazines. Mm-hmm. And
it inspired a lot of people that are into engineering these days.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah. I remember there's a UK comedy series called Spaced, which is where Simon Pegg got his start.
Edgar Wright, yeah.
All of these people.
Yeah, right.
They go to an underground Robot Wars night.
Amazing.
Like it's a dirty street fight, like watching cockfighting.
Actually, I know it's comedy, but it doesn't sound that far out of the realms of possibility.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
Hell no. I think it was called Robot Fight Club.
Yeah, of course. Kind of era, yeah.
First rule of Robot Fight Club was to try hard and do your best. I think it was. So something like that.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
I caught the end of The Last OG, which we've talked about before with Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, how did that go? Because I think you'd watched the first episode.
Yeah, and it started out really funny, and it was still funny towards the end, but it got far more darker and serious as the repercussions came back to haunt him.
Okay, so if I remember correctly, he plays a guy who's just gotten out of prison.
That's right.
And he'd been in there for 20 years or something.
Yeah, he'd gone in for 15 years because he got busted dealing crack.
Yeah, right.
And throughout the series, we've learned that someone set him up.
Okay.
Someone he knows, someone he trusts.
Right.
And the second last episode was entirely set in, I want to say, 2002 or whenever it was.
How are the outfits?
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Their 90s stuff was so on point.
That's great.
Brooklyn, so it's not West Coast like rap gear. It's proper Biggie style.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of cornrows.
Oh, they would, yeah.
They did this fantastic episode that was entirely set back then, and that colours everything you've seen in the 8 episodes before, because all these connections that you see him having now, we see through the lens of 2018.
Right.
But by putting that whole episode back then...
A whole different context for you.
You actually start to see the characters as he still does from that time, because he hasn't had the connective tissue.
Oh, isn't that clever?
So it was a really great way to just show how disassociative the experience of jail is, that it disconnects you from the world. So
you really are a time capsule.
Yeah, so not only are the people that he knows different around him, but the lifestyle, you know. They call him the last OG because no one's gangbanging anymore.
They've all grown up, and also society.
Yeah, and you know, he's desperate for work, and as a crim can't get much, so it's whether he slides back into dealing crack or not.
Yeah, it could be the easy option. So
I have no idea if there will be a second
season. That was
my
question.
It tied things up real nice in a bow.
It could just be one of those one-off seasons.
I'd love to spend more time with the characters, but we don't need to. Those that needed to be redeemed did.
Would it be worth a rewatch? Do you feel that you would get enjoyment out of rewatching it, having known whatever happens in the final episodes?
I would rewatch with someone else.
Okay. So you don't need to get more out of it?
No.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
There weren't grand mysteries or anything like that. It was a surprisingly emotional and then cathartic journey.
Oh, nice.
So it was wonderful to have experienced it once, but I don't think it's a rewatch.
Look, if they don't want to be greedy, it probably is a good idea just to let it go.
It just told a great story. It had some fantastic actors. Cedric the Entertainer was quite good.
And the fact that you've got Tracy Morgan there as a more serious character, because from... 30 Rock from Saturday Night Live, he's never a serious character.
No. No,
very different. So
seeing him play someone who has maturity and is trying to teach people that were a young Tracy to pull the head in.
I heard him interviewed. I can't even remember what it was about. It was one of those sort of longer interviews. It may have even been a podcast. It's several years back now. And he was talking about his life. And he's very serious. And I went, oh, I don't know how to take that because it sort of... It came at me rather abruptly that he was so serious. There were no jokes. It was a very sort of, not formal, but there were no jokey-jokey lightheartedness. I'm like, oh, okay, didn't know how to take it. But I think having heard him like that, for me watching this show, would not be too abrasive.
No, it wouldn't be jarring.
Yeah.
Because that's more like the real him.
Yeah, I think it is.
There was an interesting one as well. He's been on Tanked twice.
Has he?
Fish Tank show.
Yeah, right.
And the first time he was on, he was loud, large Tracy.
Yeah.
And the second time, he was much more subdued because
Tracy.
He was quite comfortable with them.
Yeah.
And they'd spent a bit of time together and stuff, so he didn't feel the need to perform as much. It was very interesting.
Look, speaking of interesting, there are a few decades through now, but I've been watching Back in Time for Dinner, which is the ABC version of, I don't know, did they call it Back in Time, the UK version? I can't remember. We're a family.
Was it the 1800s house or something like that?
I think it might have been. They've done several different series of it, I think, over there. But here we've got this one.
Yes.
And they start with a family of three kids, mother and father, and they start in 1951. And they have to live that whole decade as if it's 1951, and each day is a different decade. Each day is a different year, I should say, for them. So 1951, literally thrown in the deep end. They all have to live like it's 1951. The poor wife, who is full-time worker, you know, has a very important job in real life, and she's made to basically just be the housemaid, stuck in the kitchen for the whole day, making dinner for everybody. And she had to make a tripe dinner for them.
Mm.
And the girl, the youngest daughter, who probably would have been maybe 10, got so overwhelmed with the whole change and everything, and the fact that she was fed tripe and was asked to eat it, she just burst out crying, and the whole family sort of went, yeah, this is... You could see in their face, I went, yeah, this is quite a lot for us to take in.
Sure.
But, you know, they were on board with it, and each year got a little bit easier.
Yeah, 2 weeks from then, they're going to get sit around, get stoned and listen to Hendrix.
Man, the 80s, so many outfits. But it's amazing to watch not only the food evolve within Australia, depending on when immigrants came. Suddenly we're eating pasta and moussaka or moussaka and all that sort of stuff, but also how family dynamics change, because the kitchen and the dining rooms were always separate, and so were the lounge rooms. And now when you go to most people's houses, it's all open plan. So if you've got someone in the kitchen and you're sitting watching television, you can probably see them, or at least see part of the room they're in, where all the doors were closed. It's such a different way of living. And there was a bit where the father came home in the 1950s from dinner.
Yeah.
And he had to eat dinner by himself because the kids had already been fed.
Sure.
The wife ate with the kids. So he had to sit in the dining room by himself just eating. And he goes, oh, a bit put off. I don't really feel like dinner now. In their normal house, he was the cook.
Sure.
He loved to cook. That was his job. And he said, I just feel so separated from everyone. You know, I go out to work and I come home and no one sees me. So it was very isolating, I think, for a lot of people, and particularly the parents, because their parents came to Australia from Italy in the 1950s. So for them to not only feel how the household would have worked back then, but also how abrupt the food and everything would have been for them. Like the fact that they had to get olive oil from the chemist, had to get it from the pharmacy.
From the chemist.
Like, it's just so weird. Yeah. It's a great show. And if you've not managed to catch the episode so far, go onto iView, ABC iView. They're all there. And it's a great way to look back, if you were there at the time, to look back and go, geez, did we really eat tripe? Or to watch it now, you know, for younger generations to watch and go, I can't believe they ate tripe. It's unbelievable.
Tripe.
So tripe.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
What What else did you watch?
I learned something from American Pickers.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I don't mind that show.
I found it very watchable.
Once it's on, I'm there for the end of the episode.
They taught me why so many statues that are found, or very old statues that we have on display, have no nose. Why the nose has fallen off.
Oh, like the Sphinx and stuff?
Yeah. It's because the nose would be built from a separate piece. Otherwise, when they were building, like when they were carving the head, they'd need an extra 4 centimetres of stone on the front of the rock to carve off in order to have the nose shape.
It's quite wasteful.
Very wasteful, and it could be weeks or months extra work.
Yeah.
So instead, they would take it from the chin and the eyebrows.
Yeah.
And then add the nose afterwards. And the glues that they used broke down far quicker than the rest, so that's why there's no nose.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So it's not because someone decided to chip it off.
No, which I'd always heard that someone had stolen the Sphinx's nose.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
It just fell off a long time ago.
Because they weren't using super glue. Well, they probably were using the equivalent of super glue.
Yeah.
Tarzan grip.
Wattle and Daub. I'm sure you remember that from old Sydney Town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, I used to love that, going there. I watched... Actually, I'll save mine for the rewatching part, because I rewatched something.
Sure.
Did you watch anything else new, or should we get into the rewatch?
Let's get into the...
All right, so I decided to rewatch the late 90s teen movie Never Been Kissed with Drew Barrymore.
Oh, did she get kissed this time?
She did. It was just like the first time I watched it. It was amazing. But I like to watch those shows knowing that there's potentially somebody who is now quite famous.
Of course.
As like one of the super small characters. And it was James Franco.
Oh.
I think he said like 2 things. He was the cool kid, a.k.a. Jeremy Jordan, who was an early 90s teen singer, kind of like your Justin Bieber.
Sure.
Then disappeared, and then in the late 90s suddenly reappeared in Never Been Kissed and then disappeared again. But they were in it. Drew Barrymore is as endearing as you remember her.
Was it weird seeing, because she was like nearly 40 when that was made or something, wasn't she? Maybe that's been too...
No. Do you know why you think that?
Why?
Because Drew Barrymore has been around since she was a baby.
Yeah, and she's got that eternal youth
she
fountain going.
She looks
on.
Exactly the same. No, she would have been probably late 20s, I'd say. Okay. Surprising, right?
She's still playing a teen.
Yeah, absolutely. But she's playing... Well, she's playing a 25-year-old.
Who goes back pretending...
Pretending to play a teen, which is all fine. And, like, it's an old story. I'm pretty sure Shakespeare did it. If he didn't, whatever. It's an old story. But
it's
what
21
is creepy
Jump Street.
Is 21 Jump Street. What is really creepy is that the teacher is her love interest, which is fine because you know that she's a 25-year-old.
And is the teacher Luke Wilson?
No, that's Legally Blonde.
Ah, yeah, that's...
I can't remember his name. He was in stuff. And then he wasn't anymore. He's kind of like your... He's sort of like your Luke Wilson, your blonde Luke Wilson, which is not your Owen Wilson. Yeah. Anyway, it's quite creepy watching their relationship in the movie.
Sure.
Because he thinks, for most of it, she's 17 years old.
That's,
it's really creepy. And I don't know if I'd be able to watch it again.
Sure, it sounds like a time capsule film.
There is no rewatching for that one.
It's acceptable at the time.
Yeah.
What was that, 99?
Yeah, it would have been around then. Yeah, you had Jessica Alba. I think it was one of her first ever things.
Sure.
She was all right.
Yeah, that's generally the reaction Jessica Alba gets.
Yeah.
She's all right.
She's all right. She
was there.
She was there. She didn't break anything, so we'll probably bring her back again.
Sure.
What do you like to rewatch?
Ooh.
What kind of, like, are there movies? For me, when I was a kid, rewatchability was huge. I could literally watch the same thing every single weekend. I'm talking Star Wars.
Yep.
All those sort of Goonie shows we watched a lot of. Even things like Degrassi, because it was always on television. We just watched it because it was on. You'd know the story, just watch it all the time. Now I think it's a bit different.
I've got bits and pieces that I rewatch myself, but in terms of regular rewatching, I have a 5-year-old daughter.
See? A kid. Rewatch it.
So there are certain films that I have seen so many times. What have we been lately?
What about Frozen? Was she ever a Frozen fan?
Yeah, Frozen happened a lot when she was much younger.
Okay.
But that it very much fell away. Now it's Matilda.
Oh, Matilda.
She watches Matilda a lot.
Great movie.
I think I've seen School of Rock every third day for the last 2 years.
Okay.
Which I'm more than happy with. Yeah. But I can literally talk along with that film without the film being on.
She could have picked a worse movie to be obsessed with.
I might have pushed
Yeah, fair
I
enough.
I might have been like, do you want to see this cool music? It's got great music.
You're really going to love it.
Yeah. So we rewatched School of Rock a lot. I can see the pile of movies that she just goes back through again. There's some Barbie.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the Barbie ones are There's always really popular. One. There are quite a few of those on Netflix, I know, so you don't even need the boxes anymore. But I don't know, as an adult, I feel like I don't rewatch as many things, or if I do, it's a longer interval between watching.
Sure.
So I can easily watch something like 30 Rock.
Yep.
But I'll only watch it maybe once every couple of years. Yeah, but I can't watch it every single week.
Sure.
Because there are storylines.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I regularly rewatch The Thick of It, which is a British or political comedy. Imagine Yes Minister, but written and acted by horrible, horrible people.
Okay. Yes, I think it sounds quite British.
It has. For my money, the greatest dialogue of any show I've ever watched.
In the Thick of It.
Yeah. Okay. Just called The Thick of It.
Oh, just Thick of It.
And there's a spin-off film called In the Loop, and a lot of the people that made those two went on to make Veep.
Right.
And they also, Amando Iannucci, the director and writer, he has just put out The Death of Stalin.
Oh, okay. I'm going to watch that. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so there's loops through, but I can re-watch that at any time. The first and second series are only 3 episodes each.
Mm-hmm.
I don't rewatch them quite as much.
Okay.
But season 3, something clicked and the show is up to, I think there's 8, maybe 10 episodes in season 3. And it just really works and they get the better balance between females and males sort of stuff. But for a good year there, every night I went to sleep watching. They had 2 specials.
Yeah.
And I would watch one or the other special. And
it's because it was soothing for you? Or?
Ridiculously soothing. And I could just listen to the patter. And it's not just what they're saying, but how it's said. It's
very
rapid fire staccato. There's something about it. It works soothing for my soul.
I've got a friend who will put on Golden Girls.
Sure. To go to sleep. There you go. They've got great banter in that as well.
There's a really
good pattern. Anytime the 4 of them around the table, the rapid fire hits at each other.
Yeah, there's a certain pace. I understand what you mean.
And it feels comfortable.
It does feel very comfortable. A show that I used to watch a lot growing up was Absolutely Fabulous.
Sure.
I can still sit down and watch that.
I've seen you.
Yeah, it's such a good show. Mm-hmm. Season 1 and 2 are probably my favourites. And then I can't remember, it might have been 5 where Safi had the baby or was pregnant. And then had the baby. That's a very funny season as well. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 I was a bit about, but I can always go back and still enjoy.
Yep.
Absolutely enjoy. Movie-wise, though, I don't know. I don't tend to watch movies over and over again anymore.
Shaun of the Dead. I think at last count I was up to 54 viewings.
Oh, no, I think I'm probably up to about 5. I can get back to that. I know all the references. I still remember them.
It's a very comfortable film.
Mm.
And it's got great rhythm. Black Books. I rewatch Black Books quite a
fair
bit.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And that, when I say rewatch, I more just put that on when I'm in the room. And I don't sit there and actively watch it.
It's there in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel shows like that are good ones to have if you're doing like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
So you don't have to listen. I mean, sorry, you can just listen. You don't necessarily have to watch. Ah, watchability. Look, if you've got any TV shows or movies that you like to watch over and over again and you'd never get sick of it, let us know. Jump onto Facebook.
I want to know.
I don't know if we've got too much more to get to before we start talking about spoiler stuff.
I reckon hit that big red button. Let's do it. I'm ready.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1. You have been warned.
Fear the Walking Dead. Mm. We lost a pretty major character.
Mm.
A very major character. Mm. Would I say it was shocking, like as in surprising that it happened? No, because it was sort of signposted throughout this whole entire season.
That's right. We've been waiting 8 episodes for the other shoe to drop.
But I did that thing that they want you to do. I kept throughout this episode going, maybe she isn't really dead.
Sure, maybe she's hiding.
Yeah, maybe she's hiding. Maybe she is. Even at the end, I'm like, There's chicken wire behind her. She could climb up there. Mm. She could do it. Even though I'd already seen the aftermath of the stadium and that was all burnt out and everything, I still had hope. And then I went straight onto Twitter after I saw the episode, yes. And I typed in Madison, Fear the Walking Dead. Straight away, most of the tweets were, no, she's not really gone until she's gone. Like, we didn't see the body. We didn't see the body. However, the actress has said, that's the end.
Yep.
So who do you believe?
The actress.
She's gone. She's doing something else, isn't she?
Yeah, she's headed off to make the Deadwood movie. Oh, whatever it is. She's doing Deadwood.
Yeah. So that's it for her.
Yeah. I think that's better.
Yeah.
Significantly better. I'm stoked for more Deadwood.
I'm more than happy with her going and doing that. A lot of people said they didn't like her character in Fear the Walking Dead.
I liked her an awful lot more than Alicia.
Yeah, Alicia is still there.
So they've pulled kind of the trick that I think proper Walking Dead wanted to do of kill off the parent so that it can be about the child.
So, yeah, so Alicia is Carl in terms. But Alicia's got a big fan base. Not that that means anything for Walking Dead writers.
I imagine plenty of them have come over from the 100.
Exactly what they've done.
They've followed her from elsewhere. They've enjoyed her character and acting more elsewhere.
And they want her to do more. She's an Aussie, isn't she?
She is.
Yeah, she's good. But look, I'm fine with what happened in the episode. Obviously, now we've got the second season. The second half of the season to come.
August.
Yeah, so we've got a little while to wait.
Yeah.
But there are all these fresh, new, exciting and interesting characters in Fear the Walking Dead now. And I'm not even talking about Morgan.
No, the three big new ones.
Man, they're great.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I actually thought I'd find Jenna Elfman annoying, but I actually really like her character. I like the way she plays her character too.
I'm starting to see little bits and pieces of Eugene coming through. That self-serving, slightly cowardish.
Yeah. In a less sort of comic role.
Not as funny or flashy.
And I don't know about you, but I find Morgan less annoying in this.
Infinitely so.
How is that possible?
I think because he's not bouncing off people that are morbid and angry and depressed.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Well, that's true. Anyway, I enjoyed it and I'm looking forward to it coming back.
Yeah.
Westworld, however.
Whoa.
In the first take of this podcast, before the gremlins ate it, you hadn't watched Westworld,
I was not trying to... And you were very cagey. Friends, I will share. She said, it's an interesting episode. It's different, and it follows a character you wouldn't expect from beginning to end.
I didn't expect it.
That's how you said it. And that's a perfect summary of it. Mm. Now, I watched it with a few friends.
Had they watched it before?
No.
Okay, so you're all watching it first go.
For the first time.
Did you...
My hand is in the air, is absolutely fucking adoring it. And everyone else in the room was like, what was
really?
That?
Really?
They enjoyed elements of it?
No, I thought it was a great episode.
It's the first time that Westworld has ever been conventional.
Yes.
It told one single story from beginning to end.
One story.
That was easy to follow.
Gave us answers.
Filled in a lot of blanks.
Exactly.
And portrayed what we'd been lazily seeing as an antagonist, as the Ghost Nation tribe.
Absolutely.
It just flipped it on its head and was like, hey, you're a bit racist because these are the good guys.
Yeah,
and
these are the good guys
all along.
The whole entire time. And because Westworld has been doing a lot of flipping around from different periods of time, even in Maeve's flashbacks to her and her daughter, you would see him walk past the window as they were cowering in their house, and you would think he's the bad one. And even last episode, you would just assumed, oh no, he's dragging her daughter away, this is the end of the world for these guys. No, he's taking care of her.
Yeah,
he's been watching out for her the whole time.
The biggest takeaway from the whole episode as well is that they've dropped hints throughout that some of the characters who woke up, some of the hosts who woke up, may not have actually woken up, and it might be Ford's script.
Yeah.
Where Ford was surprised to see him awake.
Yep.
That he'd been awake so long and was like, I'm going to keep an eye on you.
Yeah.
But just go and do your thing. And
10 years, I think he was. Well, no, sorry.
10 years without an update. And that was, I think that was still a few years before the park opened.
Yes.
So he'd been floating in the park for a good 15 plus years before the park opened. The park, I think, has been open 25, 30-ish years, somewhere around there. So he's been awake a long, long time. and it means that the sentience has always been there in the system. This is not AI.
It's not a new thing.
No, it's not. It's not a choice from Ford. It also was important that Ford said that when the Deathbringer comes for me, you will know. So he'd known for a long time that Dolores was going to go full Wyatt.
The whole time. Yeah, the whole entire time. I did wonder at the end when we saw Maeve, what would you call it? I was going to say on the operating table, but it wasn't. Let's call it the operating table. And they realize that she is communicating with other people, and you realize that she's communicating with him.
Yeah, so the daughter, I don't think, ever woke up.
I'm sure
they've talked a lot about the fact that she hadn't woken up. There was no memory of her. So I think the entire episode we were watching Maeve speak through her, or Maeve watched through her, and the question will be, who did Maeve turn on?
That's what I was wondering.
So part of me thinks it could be everyone decommissioned downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of talk about the floating bodies in the dam that they find. A lot of them hollowed out and had no memories.
Yes.
No past, no history. So it could be that.
Yeah.
But it could just be that she just booted up everyone because she was in the central hub and she just used the Wi-Fi, you know, used speedy Wi-Fi. And
she had the NBN go.
Yeah.
Except it worked well. So how many more episodes have we got now? Is it two?
Two, I believe. Not much.
Not much. And given the amount of information I felt that we got through this episode, I'm now going to assume that next week's episode will have hardly any answers and more questions.
I'd be pretty up if next week can focus on Teddy a lot.
Do you think it'll happen?
I think it has to, because we have to see him end up dead in the lake.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a lot more story to come for him of how anger, he got resentment.
There. Yeah, the story arc of Teddy. Yeah, that's true. Dolores as well, I'm still, I feel slightly in the dark about her still.
Do you think Maeve's dead?
I don't think so, but I don't know.
The only reason I say that is because she could have just transferred her consciousness if she's...
Oh!
That's what I'm getting at. Is Maeve's body dead?
Because
she pulled her forward and uploaded herself, basically.
Because they've got her body now.
Well, if she's able to, you know, if they're talking about hollowed out people, maybe those are hosts that Maeve used for a while and transferred consciousness into, bled them dry.
I'm just thinking in terms of Thady Newton being so good at Maeve. We saw how many Bernards there were.
Yep.
I wonder if there are a couple of backups of Maeve.
And if there's not, they can pull the trick they're doing with Ford of have her appear in whoever's head.
Yeah.
And talk to them that way and be a spectre, a ghoul.
So
good.
There's
so
many ways this show can go, and it's going in all the great ways.
Yep. And whether this season there's been a ton of moments that have explicitly referenced Lost and been shout-outs to Lost. Because it's about this show is about the cyclical nature of storytelling, both in real life and fiction that we choose. And that was also a big theme on Lost. Mm. The biggest cyclical thing I think they could pull is that the episode 10, so end of the season, they get to the place beyond and they find the hole and there's a hatch that they've got to go down into. So it finishes exactly how Lost season 1 did.
Of course it... Oh.
And I don't think it would be straight hatch, but I can feel them doing a similar sort of thing of, okay, we're going to cross over into this new world.
They go down all the time to the world below.
Yep.
It was even referenced in this week. Oh, so good. Look, really quickly, Handmaid's has continued to be pretty stellar in this season.
Yes.
I think I've told you it's gone well beyond the story, the books now.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different path. Yeah, and it's just great. And when you think, I just don't know if I'm interested enough for this storyline to be just about these people in this particular house, in the Waterford household. And then things get super tense and they change things around and you've got like Serena taking over, but loving being in charge, but not quietly in charge. Having of Fred, a.k.a. June, be her copywriter, like her editor. Like these women aren't supposed to even look at words anymore. Like it's banned. And the fact that they're doing this and sending out commands to Gilead as her husband, she's been forging documents whilst he's been in hospital after the explosion. And then the minute he gets back, like their world of you could see hope, and you could also see like camaraderie there, which you didn't really have before. Mm. Is suddenly Dash just suddenly he's back in charge, and then he starts to realize what they've done.
Okay.
Feel like they're going to separate a bit.
Yep.
Serena will do the separating a bit, but I feel as we get closer to the end of this season, they're going to have to. They will have to combine their powers again and work together in order to save their lives.
Awesome.
Because they could be killed for what they did. Mm-hmm. It's such a great show. We're so lucky to have so many shows that we can talk about.
Golden Age of Television, baby.
Oh, man, is it what? Is it what? Now, speaking of Golden Ages, there's been no Golden Ages in terms of movies based on video games.
No.
You either get, that wasn't too bad, or you get, oh, why did they even try? And I understand why. It's really hard to condense what could be a 10, 20, 40-hour storyline into two hours.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are used to playing the character of the hero,
being interactive,
suddenly watching a hero do the same things that they would have usually gotten to do. But I thought, all right, let's see if you can try and name as many, I want you to get to 7 actually, because that's how many I've got, as many movies based on video games as you possibly can, as fast as you can.
And did I also have to throw in an actor for each? See if I can recall someone who's in each one?
Bonus if you do.
I'm going to start with Doom, which was headlined by The Rock. And Dexter Fletcher was in there as well.
Was he really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he gets fused into a wheelchair.
That's a name I've not heard for a while.
So he directs stuff now. He directed Eddie the Eagle.
Right. Okay.
It's just fantastic. That was such a good movie.
Oh.
Very, very charming. I'm sorry. I'm being distracted from the quiz.
We could talk about Dexter for a whole episode.
We'll say Mortal Kombat. I'm going to say Michael J. White.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat. Yep.
Street Fighter, you've got Jean-Claude Van Damme and Kylie Minogue.
Plus Raul Julia. That's right. He was the bad guy.
Yeah, his final on-screen role as M. Bison.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was his last one was Adam Family Values.
Yeah, Adam Family Values. No, that came out a few months before Street Fighter.
Okay.
I'm all about my Raul
Julia.
Yeah,
you are. Oh, he's a great actor.
Okay, so let me see. Doom, Mortal Kombat.
You've got 3.
Street Fighter. We'll go Tomb Raider.
Yes, Tomb Raider.
With either Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
Or Alicia.
Let's call her Vonda.
I work here anymore.
Yeah.
Well, of course, we've got Super Mario Brothers with Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo.
To be honest, another great name. To be honest with you, I still think that's one of the better movies.
Oh, it's great fun
based on video games, it's and great I'm glad. Fun. I'm glad that it was one of the more successful ones.
Yes,
because Mario, you don't want to tamper Mario too much.
Ah, so let me see, Doom, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Tomb Raider.
If you can grab a couple more.
Super Mario Brothers.
Mm.
Assassin's Creed with Michael Fassbender.
He had a lot to do with the making of that. And I didn't see it, but I have heard people talk about it. And they said they took it far too seriously, and that was the problem.
It looks like it.
Far too serious.
Don't be serious with it. If you're going to do Altair, be a bit lighter.
You have to. Mm. You have to. All right, so you only have to go with one more. I've got 2 here.
Battleship, but that's technically not a video game. That's
it's a
board
game. It's got Riri in it, though.
It does. I know I can pull this.
I mean, I know how to give you a clue.
All right, you can give me a clue.
So the movie and the game, there were several of them, of both.
Oh, Resident Evil, of course, with Mila Jovovich.
I would even hazard a guess to say that that's probably one of the successful. Probably the successful. The fact that they've had so many.
It would have made the most, more than even the Tomb Raider films combined, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Well done.
Thanks. I want a Far Cry movie. I'd be pretty down with Far Cry 3, specifically.
There's been rumours about that. There's also been Uncharted movie rumours.
Yeah, they want Tom Holland to play young Drake. Young Nathan Drake.
Okay.
With that, but I'm not as beholden to Uncharted.
You don't? Yeah, really? So beautiful.
If I was going to make a game, a movie of a game, I'd want Shadow of the Colossus.
Yes.
Which is
just beautiful. I'd take the Last Guardian as well, or really any of the team.
Shadow of the Colossus, I think you should go, like, in terms of art direction, maybe something like a Never-Ending Story vibe to it. That'd work.
Yeah.
Well, same with Last Guardian.
It has to be dark and shadowy and more light coming in, but not until later do you realize that the light is the bad.
Spoiler. That's going to do it for part two of, well, except part two for us, part one for you, the listener.
the lost hidden episode.
The lost hidden episode that, you know what, I may even at one point in time just throw a little bit out there for you just so you could understand why it was never going to see the light of
if
day.
If you're like robot remixes,
yeah,
we've got the episode
exactly
for you.
So robotic. Thank you very much for listening. And Tom, thank you.
Toodaloo, pip, pip.
Yo, can't go on.